Welcome to another podcast. It's liesoffice.com, brought to you by great local sponsors like the Axley Law Firm, and we certainly appreciate their support over the years. Mike Riley, who's a personal injury lawyer, as well as John Walsh, joins us now. We talk to him periodically because he's not only a good personal injury lawyer, but he pays attention to current events and worked for the CIA at one time. So we're going to talk about some international events. Before we get any further, counselor, what is your phone number if somebody's been injured in an accident?
608-257-5661.
Okay. Well, let's start out with Donald Trump's speech to the United Nations. I was at the gym watching this. I'm sitting on the recumbent bike, and other people were watching. And as he went into this diatribe, you should have seen the look on people's faces at Supreme Health and Fitness. Let me play this clip.
It is far past time for the nations of the world to confront another reckless regime, one that speaks openly of mass murder, vowing death to America, destruction to Israel, and ruin for many leaders and nations in this room. The Iranian government masks a corrupt dictatorship behind the false guise of a democracy. It has turned a wealthy country with a rich history and culture into an economically depleted rogue state whose chief exports are violence, bloodshed, and chaos. It is time for the entire world to join us in demanding that Iran's government end its pursuit of death and destruction. We cannot let a murderous regime continue these destabilizing activities while building dangerous missiles, and we cannot abide by an agreement if it provides cover for the eventual construction of a nuclear program. The Iran deal was one of the worst and most one-sided transactions the United States has ever entered into. Frankly, that deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it. But
does he, then he says, believe me. And whenever he says, believe me, you know he's lying. Does he understand that essentially the rest of the world signed on to that agreement?
No, he doesn't seem to understand much. And you know, this is a man who has only focused on making money and taking advantage of women for most of his life. So I don't think he's had a lot of time for international affairs, except those he conducts with, you know, foreign women. But he just doesn't understand these things. One, that was, look, the Iran deal, is it perfect? No, deals never are. You don't get everything. Nobody ever does get everything. Iran certainly didn't. Most of the Iranians, certainly conservative Iranians, think the deal was horrible and don't believe it was appropriate at all. You know, one thing that strikes me, Sly, is we could get the deal with North Korea that we got with Iran, we would jump at it. I mean, there'd be dancing in the streets at, you know, in Washington, D.C. if that happened. It's not going to happen, but if it did, I mean, that was a tremendous deal in terms of reining in Iran. And one of the reasons the deal isn't perfect is simply this, that there were no good alternatives. I read article after article on this. There's no question that the way their program is structured, it's dug in, it's hidden. If they had chosen to just continue, you know, we couldn't have taken out one facility and stopped that. And if we did, there was always the risk that you were going to have war between Iran and Israel. But the bottom line is, it would have certainly at least required that either Israel attack Iran, which would be a disaster in that area, or that we go to war against yet another Muslim country, which is unpalatable to anyone, including the vast majority of the American people. It's easy to get up in the UN and spout this nonsense. You know, tell people we're going to send their boys over there to die and see how enthusiastic they are about that. Even his 20% Bubba base would have a real problem with that. So great deal, maybe not. At the worst deal, oh my heavens, you know, we've signed on to a lot worse deals than that over the years, including, you know, things where we agreed to try to overthrow democracies. So, you know, I find that just, you know, so ill-informed and unhelpful. And ultimately, look, if we decide we're going to back out of that agreement only means anything, and Iran's restraint only means anything if you've got sanctions from all these other nations. Nobody's going to sign back on to sanctions if we back out of that deal. It's not going to happen. So they're going to get what they need from other countries, and, you know, maybe we can cause a certain amount of inconvenience, but we will not have, you know, a regime of sanctions that we had in place that was supported by other nations. There is no way they're going to support that now if we back out of the deal. So our backing out could do some harm and will do no good at all.
Here's another audio soundbite of President Trump speaking again to the United Nations.
Now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
I actually heard one commentator talking about Trump getting the idea of using the term Rocket Man because he's an Elton John fan. That was some of the political analysis of those remarks. Your thoughts on what the president said?
I just hope he packed his bags last night pre-flight. You know?
Man, you are full of them today.
You're in a roll today. I like the song. I don't like the rhetoric. I mean, look, why descend to their level? I mean, that's all you're doing. I mean, now it sounds like a couple of five-year-olds fighting in a playground. You're this and you're that. You're, you know, so.
I bet your kids were better behaved than that, Mike.
No, they're smarter than that, even at five, I think. It sets a terrible tone. It undermines the seriousness of what you're saying. I mean, yes, this is a serious threat. Nobody wants these folks, of all people, to have nuclear weapons. It's also true, however, that they have a long, long history of threatening mayhem and not committing it. I mean, it's been, you know, 64 years since the war ended. You know, we haven't invaded them, and this notion that we're always practicing to invade them is absolute nonsense. It's not going to happen, never has. If we wanted to do it, we certainly could have done it long before now. We could have used nuclear weapons on them when they didn't have any, and nobody else who did was going to intervene on their behalf. We didn't do it. We're not going to do it. So the notion that we're a threat to them is just silly. But the notion that they're going to suddenly launch strikes or do these things, again, they've been in a position, if they wanted to invade South Korea for a long time. Now, at the end of the day, they'd lose. But, I mean, they could certainly wreak havoc in doing it, and they still could. The problem right now is the same one you had with Iran, except multiplied severalfold, because Iran wasn't in a position to strike at, you know, they could have maybe struck at Israel, but Israel's Air Force and missile defense systems are up to handling pretty much anything Iran could throw at them. Problem we have now is South Korea is not up to handling anything North Korea could throw at them. I mean, they would clearly, if they chose to, they could destroy Seoul. They could kill hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. Again, would they lose in the end? Yes, they would. But does that mean that it wouldn't be a horrific loss of life? You know, what the president said, I thought, a few months ago was even worse. You know, he's asked about it, and he said, what would happen if there were war over there? And he said, well, as long as they're dying over there, that's okay. Well, among the people that would be dying over there, leaving aside that it's a lot of completely innocent, you know, South Koreans who are good people, you got 28,000 troops there, and certainly a number of them would be among the people who died. And the thought that an American president doesn't think that matters much as long as it's happening over there is really appalling. So, you know, that just shows his lack of grasp of the problem. Now, if we look at the problem realistically, it's a very knotty, vexing problem. Every administration for the last 15 to 20 years has tried to deal with it. None of them have done it very successfully. I think the current regime of sanctions is probably the best we've ever had. And I think the fact that Russia and China were willing to go along with it shows their concern about North Korea getting nuclear weapons.
And China took a step further the other day.
Yeah, they did. And then when China said they're not going to have their banks deal with them, I mean, I think that's very important. Now, I think we have a lot of leverage with China, given the fact that we give them hundreds of billions of dollars in trade every year. But the bottom line is, it's clear that people are taking this seriously and are making an effort. You know, when you say people now are talking as if they get a nuclear weapon, saying they have nuclear weapons, they've had them for a while. I still don't think they can miniaturize them to put them on a warhead. There's some suggestion they may be able to. I think that's coming from DIA, Defense Intelligence. And frankly, having worked with them, I don't put a lot of stock in anything they say. They always overestimate threats. I also think you not only have to have a missile, you have to have a nose cone that's survivable so you can deliver this thing with accuracy and with the nuclear weapon intact. There's no evidence that they have that, and they probably are a few years away from getting it. Will they get there? They probably will. And, you know, that is a frightening thought in some ways. So then you say, okay, great, what do we do? Sanctions haven't worked so far. I think that the new level of sanctions that are being ratcheted up are more likely to have a real effect. But, you know, the problem with sanctions is the men at the top in these regimes, sanctions don't really bother them much. They're going to live their lives. They've got a whole society that they can draw from. They have these people brainwashed. So, you know, the question is, will their economy be damaged enough at some point so he actually fears that there might be a challenge to his regime? And that, you would hope, might deter them. You can't say that with certainty. So what's the option? I mean, if you strike at him, even if you just strike the missile sites and strike the sites where they're developing their atomic weapons, one, a lot of it's probably dug into the point where short of an atomic attack, nuclear attack, you probably can't get at them, even with some of the bunker buster bombs we have. And even if you, assuming you could, that almost certainly is going to trigger some sort of retaliation against South Korea, you know, and I don't think they can effectively retaliate against us, although they, you know, they could certainly go after our troops in South Korea, but they could certainly retaliate against Seoul and, again, cause hundreds of thousands, if not perhaps millions, of casualties. So, you know, is that really something you want to do? We also have China, which has said basically if North Korea starts it, they're not going to intervene on their behalf. They haven't said that if we start it. So, you know, at this point, we've got both China and Russia going along with us in terms of significant sanctions. If we are going to start attacking them, then they're going to get support from certainly from China and probably from Russia as well. And that just doesn't bode well for anyone. So as much as I think that if this is a legitimate concern, I think that the costs far outweigh the benefits if you're going to undertake a military strike. It just, you know, the downside of that is huge. And the upside is there's no guarantee that you're going to really be able to take out all of their capacity to develop these weapons. So, you know, nobody likes this. I mean, it's a bad situation, but ranting like a playground bully does not help things. That's what they do routinely. This is the first time one of our presidents has chosen to respond in kind.
Well, let's talk about our presidents. And I know hindsight is 2020, but in fact, when President Bush, George W. Bush, did his axis of evil speech, and the United States invaded Iraq. And then, of course, Muammar Gaddafi, who did give up his nuclear program, ended up being dethroned, partly by his own people, but nonetheless, the United States had a hand in it. Didn't that send a message to the Kim regime? Let's face it, that's a family criminal enterprise. Their number one concern is staying in power and keeping their rogue regime running. Didn't that send a message to them that their number one way of staying in power is becoming a nuclear threat?
You know, I've seen a lot of that, and I guess I have a problem with that because, okay, one, you know, Gaddafi didn't get invaded. We didn't invade, but we did, you know, we used our air power to help take him out. And which, in my view, we should have done in Syria as well very early on, but we didn't. But, you know, his giving up the weapon, not giving up the weapons, isn't what triggered that at all. Now, they can use that as an excuse. And I've seen a lot of commentators say that. I don't believe anybody who looks at the situation, certainly looks at Saddam. I mean, you didn't give up nuclear weapons. We made up nuclear weapons to justify invading. So, or at least the nuclear weapons program. I don't think if anybody really believed that Gaddafi was close to having deliverable nuclear weapons, I think the Europeans might have taken him out before we even did, because they're awfully, awfully close to that situation. And Germany and France could certainly have handled the chore on their own without any problem. I think that what you really, if you look at the fact that you're right, it is a family criminal enterprise. It's just a dynasty. And, you know, dynasties want to continue. That's their nature. And the one thing that he knows will ensure his not continuing is if he launches any sort of an attack on South Korea or the U.S. He's going to be obliterated if he does that. And everybody, and every president forever has said that, but they've said it in much more measured, responsible tones. So I think the disincentive for him to launch any kind of attack or to utilize any nuclear weapons is that it ensures that he dies and so does his dynasty. I don't know if he's got a super deep shelter. Maybe he survives, but he's going to come out to a bunch of quite angry people who are going to be prepared to kill him themselves. Be a Mussolini at that point. It just isn't, the notion that his having those weapons is completely intolerable. Would it be much better if he didn't? Absolutely. No question about that. But again, what is the price you're willing to pay to ensure that he doesn't have those? And is that price really worth paying? Because how likely is it that he would ever use those weapons? I mean, it would ensure his destruction, his instantaneous destruction. So I just don't believe there's any reason to think he's, despite all the saber rattling, which they've done for decades, I don't think there's any reason to believe he'd pull that sword out of the sheath. I just don't think he ever would.
All right. Go ahead.
Russia's been able, Russia and China, who have been real enemies for so long, and, Russia at least appears to be one again, and maybe China as well. I mean, they've got real, thermonuclear capability that could, reach us, obviously, and devastate our country, even though theirs would also be devastated. And everybody's, the Russians have had those weapons since the 50s. China's had them since not too long after that in the 60s. Nobody's used them. I don't think anybody will because of the mutual assured destruction. And in his case, it isn't even mutual assured destruction. It's unilateral assured destruction because he has no capacity to destroy America and won't have for the foreseeable future. We have the capacity to completely obliterate Korea. That's the one thing that the president said that I agree with. We certainly can and would obliterate him if he launched any kind of attack on us or our allies.
We got to take a break. Mike Riley with us from the Axley Law Firm at SlysOffice.com. SlysOffice.com is brought to you by St. Vincent de Paul. The food pantry that they have helps people who have jobs but literally can't make enough money to get by or get assistance. Every month, whether it be a car repair, an unscheduled medical bill, or some other type of thing can throw people who work hard into some very difficult spots. So when you help St. Vincent de Paul, you help feed working people. St. Vincent de Paul in Dane County. You're listening to SlysOffice.com. I'm Sly. Today with us, Madison attorney, Mike Riley. He's with the Axley Law Firm. He's a personal injury lawyer. We're talking about a variety of issues. The situation with Robert Mueller's investigation into Paul Manafort and the President of the United States has really escalated over the last few days as far as what we know. And we now know, of course, that there was and this was long before Mueller, there was a FISA warrant. Not easy to get. I know they're easily approved once they get to the process, but to get to that process is not easy, listening in on an American. What do you make of the developments with Paul Manafort? And now it appears as though Robert Mueller wants to know what happened when President Trump met with the Russian diplomats.
Well, I don't think any of it bodes well for the president. One thing that is interesting is, the president, of course, has insisted that Barack Obama wiretapped him, which is clearly untrue. Several people made the point, the president doesn't order wiretaps. They come through the Justice Department. They have to go through FISA.
Haven't been watching Sean Hannity enough.
No, I heard some loon on the radio the other day say the same thing. So he's been proven correct. No, he's been proven wrong, as is often the case, if not always the case. I mean, no, he was not wiretapped. What happens is, if you're going to wiretap Manafort and Manafort happens to be talking to Trump or anyone else, you're going to pick that conversation up. But that's not wiretapping Trump. That's wiretapping Manafort, and you might have some collateral conversations that you pick up. First, there's no evidence in the world, nor could he, that the president ordered that. You're not able to do that. That's not the way the system works. It clearly came out of the Justice Department. And I know people say, that was clear. Yes, but the president told him. There's no evidence of that at all either, just none. I mean, the fact is, Paul Manafort and a number of other people close to the president, at least, were engaged in activities that are likely illegal, that may well constitute a conspiracy to influence our elections. And, the notion that somehow the FBI doesn't have any business looking into that is complete nonsense. I mean, that strikes at the very heart of our democracy. And, you know, people should be deeply concerned, not simply that the Russians are doing this, which is appalling, but the fact that apparently there were people very close to the president, part of his campaign, who at least appeared willing to assist the Russians in doing that. Now, what they actually did, we don't know yet. But we do know that, there was certainly a willingness to take meetings, a willingness to explore this kind of thing. And that in itself could easily constitute a conspiracy. And taking meetings is, you know, is an overt act in support of that conspiracy. So I think what's going on with Manafort is they'd like to get Manafort in a position where, you know, he's going to spill the beans and say, okay, here's what really went on, in exchange for some form of immunity. There was somebody on, it was interesting the other day, somebody pointed out on one of the shows that while Trump can pardon everyone, apparently including himself, in terms of federal crimes, there's a parallel investigation in New York, and they can't be pardoned for state crimes.
Yes, Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general there, is the one who really went after Trump University.
Well, that's, yeah. And I noticed that they're rushing now to kind of legalize all that stuff to give those people a break again now that he's in power. He, you know, paid off the settlement quickly before the election, so it wouldn't be as big an issue. And then now he's racing to make sure that his buddies in that same industry.
Well, actually, he paid it off right after the election, so
right
it wasn't hanging over his head. Right,
correct.
Right.
No,
here is,
right.
Let me just play a clip of Congressman Eric Swalwell from California, who's on the House Intelligence Committee. They're doing the investigation. He was on MSNBC the other night.
You know, the reports that I read in, you know, when CNN, the New York Times, was that it may have been for prior contacts with pro-Russian Ukrainians. And, right. You know, whether that's true or not, we don't know. But I actually think that Paul Manafort's prior contacts with Russia and the Ukrainians, and Michael Flynn's prior contacts, and you know, Carter Page's contacts, those weren't disqualifiers for the president and his team. Those were actually bullet points on their resume. Those leaped off the page. Those, you know, made them more appealing, knowing, you know, how the president views Russia and the prior contacts that he had. So I actually think it helped them get the job, not prevented them from keeping it or being in his ear.
That's quite a provocative statement.
It is, and that's one of those things that I just don't know. We'll find out more, and we'll see where that goes. But, I mean, what we do know is that Jared and the boys were, you know, his son was prepared to take meetings with these guys in the hope that they were going to end up with Russian people who had Russian connections in the hope that they'd support him. I mean, president himself says, and I know he claims it's a joke now, but, you know, come on, go on, find the rest of those emails. I mean, to talk like that is just so irresponsible, but then that's the nature of this president and this presidency. And that's what, frankly, you find frightening when you talk about, you know, things, potential for war in Korea, you know, potential for scotching the deal with Iran, and if anything, encouraging the radical right in that country, you know, in their intransigence towards the rest of the world. I mean, none of that is helpful, and none of it's thoughtful, and that's the thing that's scary. It seems to be so little thought, it's just like the Rocket Man. I mean, this sounds cute, let's throw that in there. And, you know, words have real consequences, and he just doesn't seem to understand that, certainly not on the stage he's on now.
You know, when this investigation is all done, I hope that we can take some steps that would make 2018 and 2020 less vulnerable to some of the things that Russians may have done or have done to manipulate our election for any one side. But Facebook has certainly not been an honest player in all this. They denied. And we still don't know exactly who paid for the ads and the manipulation. But there has to be a whole new view on these business models for whether it be Google or Facebook or anyone else in social media to be a responsible corporate citizen in America. And maybe that's an oxymoron. I think Facebook should face a serious penalty if, in fact, they knowingly took money from people trying to manipulate an election.
Now, that'll be the interesting thing, whether they obviously claim that they didn't do it knowingly. But, you know, we do need to have a serious discussion about social media. I mean, the reach and the power of Facebook is incredible. I mean, my own spouse, God love her, and she's a wonderful human being, but she spent so much time on Facebook. I mean, certainly she watches CNN thing too, but she spends more time on Facebook, certainly, than she has FaceTime with me anymore, I think. And, you know, that's, and maybe that's a good thing. You know, many folks would probably say she's wise. But what, you know, the bottom line is really people get so much of their information now from the internet and specifically from social media sites. And for somebody like Facebook who has that degree of power, they just, you know, with great power goes great responsibility. You can't just say that's First Amendment and people could say whatever they want. You know, to allow people to put things on your site that are attempting to manipulate an election, especially when it's a foreign country that's attempting to manipulate. And then they, you know, they were not identifying whose site it was. And I noticed that, you know, the president immediately came out when Facebook says, okay, from now on, we're going to make sure we identify who paid for this. And the president was immediately critical of that, you know.
The things that he has passed on and forwarded on his Twitter account, including a manipulated photo with him swinging a golf club and a golf ball, knocking, making it look like that's what knocked former Secretary Hillary Clinton down. It's so beyond the pale. I have no words.
So
that's the president of the United States.
It is, and it. I mean, it is incredibly juvenile and irresponsible. And again, you know, if you look at somebody like Kim Jong-un, and again, I don't, you know, Jong-un himself is, God knows, seems to be, I don't think he's really a madman, but he's certainly a horrific human being. But, you know, to get engaged with people like that and to behave that way and to think that something like the Hillary Clinton, that's funny, you know, if you think it's funny and you guys want to laugh about it while you're having a few beers, fine, you know, be my guest. But to retweet that, and again, so much of what he does is just directed at his base. He's got this 20%, and base is a really good word because these are not a lot of the, I'm trying to remember the numbers, but the vast majority of the people in his 20% base don't really, if they're asked the difference between Republicans, Democrats, they don't know. They can't say which is conservative and which is liberal. It's really appalling. I mean, they know so little.
What was common denominator?
It is. And I mean, that's a big part of his base. It's not all of it, I'm sure, but it is a huge part of it. And that's what all this is for. I mean, that's firing up the base. They like that. They like it when he talks stupid. They find that really entertaining. I'm sure they loved it when he's failed to put Hillary in jail, having said he would, then having said he wouldn't, and then suggesting maybe he might again. He hasn't done it. And I'm sure this is kind of a sop for those that were sure he was going to do it and are really disturbed that he hasn't.
Mike Riley with the Axley Law Firm, personal injury lawyer, as well as John Walsh. Give the folks your phone number one more time.
608-257-5661.
Mike, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Sly. It's always a pleasure.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.